A bloody riot in Mecca sparks an outpouring of rage on the streets of Tehran. And Iranian religious leaders vow revenge against Saudi Arabia and the great Satan, the United States. As more American military men and equipment are rushed to the Persian Gulf, more than 100 congressional Democrats go to court in an effort to restrict the president's Gulf buildup. Witnesses in Mecca say it began at the end of a mass prayer as 2 million Muslims crowded into Islam's holy city for the Hajj, the annual pilgrimage to the holiest shrine of their religion. Suddenly, groups of Iranian pilgrims poured out of the Grand Mosque. Some pulled out colored banners, while others held up pictures of the Ayatollah Khomeini. As several Iranians climbed a nearby tower to hang pictures of Iranian religious leaders, Iranians with portable bullhorns led groups of their own countrymen and women in organized chants, directed primarily at the United States and Israel. Saudi witnesses say the Iranians began marching in direct defiance of the Saudi ban on political demonstrations of any kind in Mecca. As Saudi riot police moved in to halt the march, some demonstrators began hurling rocks, sticks, and bottles. Pictures released by official Saudi television appear to show the demonstrators as the aggressors, even to the point of charging the masked line of riot police and driving them back. Saudi officials say 402 people died in the rioting, 275 Iranians, 85 policemen, and 42 other pilgrims. The Saudis say the dead were victims of the rioters, or were trampled to death in the surges of the huge crowd. But Iranian leaders claim the number of Iranian dead is 600, and that the victims died from Saudi police machine gun fire.
The police had blocked those roads, and therefore people had no other option except standing in the streets and enjoying the entertainment of the Saudi authorities through their bullets and their clubs. Apparently, tear gases and other forms of poisonous gases have been thrown to the people, and many who died really because of those poisonous gases.
This is place in life. What happened in Mecca was tragic. There were 2 million people there. It's not something that was done in a back alley. Today, up to date, every Muslim leader has contacted His Majesty, either by telephone or by telegram, and condemned what happened and supported our action. Not one single bullet was fired.
As Iranian leaders cried for revenge against both Saudi Arabia and the United States, Tehran mobs were quick to act. Last Saturday, angry crowds sacked and burned both the Saudi and Kuwaiti embassies in Tehran. And Iranian leaders have vowed further revenge.
The Mecca riots have brought the threat of Iran's Islamic revolution directly into the heart of the Arab world. Ayatollah Khomeini's supporters overthrew the Shah of Iran in 1979. Since then, Persian Gulf states have lived with increasing fear that Iran's revolutionary fundamentalism will attempt to overwhelm the ruling Arab houses of kings, princes, and emirs.
My guess is that what the Iranians are going to do is to run a propaganda war against the House of Saud. And what they want from that propaganda war is to force the Saudis to back away from an alliance with the United States. They want them to discourage American presence in the Persian Gulf.
All the ruling Arab families are from the Sunni branch of Islam. Persian Iran is a country of Shia Muslims, Islam's minority. The Gulf Arabs support Iraq in its nearly 7-year-old war with Iran. Iraqi troops troops are a bulwark in the view of many Arab leaders containing the expansion of the Iranian revolution. All the Gulf Arab states have substantial Shia Muslim populations. In Kuwait, Shias loyal to Iran have been sentenced to prison for terrorism, including last May's bombing and fire at the Ahmadi oil refinery. There is widespread concern in the region that the Mecca riots may incite more violence. The Gulf Arab's massive oil installations are vulnerable to attack. Iran has already threatened such action. The riots in Mecca add to concern. Iran may turn its violence directly on to its Arab neighbors.
It's a very grave threat to the House of Saud, both externally and internally, because there is, say, a lot of opposition to the House of Saud within the country, which this will tend to feed.
It seems to me what we're looking at now is a very serious effort by Iran to assert hegemony over the Gulf. And part of the front in this very important battle is, of course, in the war with Iraq on the land. Another front is in the waters of the Gulf itself, which we're seeing with the Kuwaiti reflagging and the American involvement. But now, what we've seen in the Mecca riots is a third front. It's a political front, and in some ways, I think it's the most serious and destabilizing. It must be extremely worrisome to the Saudis and also, of course, to the United States.
Arab sources say Iranian terrorism has gone unchecked since the seizure of American embassy hostages shortly after Khomeini took power. The same sources believe such actions will continue as long as Iran is convinced it can carry them out with impunity.
Given the rhetoric in Tehran, and I think given the situation that occurred recently in Mecca, which indicates to me that the revolutionary fervor of the Iranians is at a high point, I would expect that they would continue to try and intimidate us. And we don't respond very well to intimidation.
As the Muslim world rocked from the shockwaves generated by the bloody Mecca riots, U.S. Navy warships quietly formed their second escort for the reflagged Kuwaiti tanker through the Persian Gulf.
Most of the attention focused on the mine-damaged tanker Bridgeton, which had been taking on a partial load of oil in Kuwait. Sending the smaller, faster gas prince ahead with the U.S. Navy escort was meant to be a surprise.
The tactics you use must be carefully guarded, must remain tactics that are secret. We can't let the other guy know how we're going to beat him.
So the gas prince suddenly departed with its LPG cargo and headed back through the Persian Gulf with the warships Kidd and Cromwell.
Sunrise on the Persian Gulf revealed the tanker Gas Prince steaming southeast along with her U.S. Navy escort. To the left, the missile destroyer Kidd. On the right, the USS Cromwell. Running behind, the cruiser Fox. The trip was passing without incident, just as the first one had, until the oil tanker Bridgeton struck a mine. Fox Captain William Mathis believes that surprise taught his men a lesson.
Basically, I think all of the skippers out here are reviewing constantly in their mind what options are available to them for both defense and offense if something hostile does happen. We just passed a box over in the water, which I visually identified and the lookouts identified, but you look at those things, and there's all kinds of junk floating around in the Gulf here, and you wonder immediately what that is, and you want to know if it's been identified and what kind of a piece of debris is it. You're thinking about how to counter various threats, just running through different options in your mind while you're up here.
And the stakes are pretty high, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I've got 501 men on here that I consider pretty high, including you guys.
Overhead, a helicopter darted in every direction, chasing after unknown objects, sighting fishing vessels, even oil rigs, all considered threats until clearly identified. On board below, crew members were well aware the mine that struck the Bridgeton was unexpected.
Our reaction was to put out more lookouts and put out small arms to deal with the mine. And beyond that, though, we all know that we have to be extra alert and extra vigilant when we're up in the Persian Gulf.
We always report stuff that looks suspicious, but more or less now you're kind of wanting to look at things in the water a little bit more skeptically.
It is widely believed the mine that damaged the huge tanker Bridgeton could easily have sunk any of the Navy escort ships.
When the Bridgeton struck a mine, the incident struck a nerve. This is a dangerous place to do business, said one officer. The unspoken order is, expect trouble.
Well, right now I'm in condition 3, which means all of my weapon stations are ready to respond instantly. I can be at condition 1 or general quarters in less than 3 minutes. I think we've got a fairly clear-cut set of rules up here, the rules of engagement that we're operating under, and I don't have any problem with those. I think that all of us understand what hostile intent is. I feel pretty good about what we're doing up here, and I feel very confident about this ship and the crew.
The reflagged tanker Gas Prince and her U.S. Navy escort have made it safely through the treacherous Strait of Hormuz, which passed Iranian Silkworm missile. According to Admiral Burnson, the convoy detected more Iranian Navy boat activity than usual, but none that was threatening.
Well, we have had an Iranian frigate that's been trailing along behind us.
How far away?
Varying from 7-8 miles. It's not all that unusual. But again, until some demonstrated hostile intent, those ships have as much right as any other ship to sail in international waters.
An F-4 jet fighter was picked up flying a routine mission, but it never approached the Gas Prince escort. But the Admiral repeatedly turned away questions about Silkworm missile activity.
I'd rather not discuss the Silkworm missiles.
The Pentagon has reported the Silkworms are in place along the Strait of Hormuz with just a few hours needed to make them operational. The orders are, any indication of hostile intent could justify retaliation. This convoy made it past without trouble, but that was one trip, and there is intense planning for many others. Each escort trip, said the Admiral, is going to be unique.
Americans were reminded of the hazards of Persian Gulf patrol duty this week with the return of the U.S. Navy warship that lost 37 crewmen to an Iraqi missile.
The Stark and its crew got a hero's welcome even before it reached dock. Waiting relatives didn't seem bothered by the hot Florida sun above the Mayport Naval Base. As it came home, it was almost impossible to see any of the damage from the May 17th missile attack in the Persian Gulf, which claimed 37 lives. Finally, the time came that every crew member hoped for, shore leave, and a big welcome home kiss and hug from their loved ones.
What's it like to be home?
Hard to explain. It's great.
Oh, I'm just so thankful. We're just so proud of him and all of them.
The memory of the Iraqi missile attack remains strong for many of the Stark's crew.
Well, I was on the mess decks when it happened. We were testing our engines, and we had thought that one of the engines blew. And then all of a sudden, the whole ship was full of smoke. And henceforth, we started fighting fires.
Some remained bitter and weren't allowed to defend themselves.
I lost quite a few good close friends. Just glad we made it back. I'm really sorry for the families.
They wanted to attack, to have a counterattack at the time, something they wanted to pay back some dues.
There is a concern here about the potential for future violence in the Persian Gulf and the possibility more U.S. lives may be lost.
I'm sad they're out there. I just don't want no war.
But the president's Persian Gulf policy still has a lot of support here.
I think it's a good policy. I think we need to keep the shipping lanes open for not just us, but the rest of the free world.
Would you go back?
No.
Why not?
I've been through too much hell already.
For many here, the joy of being back home was tempered by the memory of the 37 crewmen who died aboard the Stark. But it was not the time to question U.S. policy. It was a time to enjoy being back home.
we are in the Persian Gulf, it's all waterway, and people, other people, when they walk around, they have to be very polite.
Make the word soft and sweet, you just don't know when you have to eat them.
Small boats that it says are being trained for suicide missions against the U.S.
It implies that we are in the Persian Gulf, it's all waterway, and people, other people, when they walk around, they have to be very polite.
I think I have an advice for people who are sending these messages. And it's an old American saying, I learned it when I was with your Air Force training. And that is, make your words soft and sweet, you just don't know when you have to eat them.
Intelligence sources in Washington say they are not sure if the squads are actually being trained to ram explosive-loaded boats into the American convoys, or whether this is just rhetoric designed to exacerbate anti-American feeling.
Their holding of naval maneuvers could be taken as another example of what I've referred to as this continuing effort to increase tension, to try to intimidate international shipping, and in particular to try to intimidate regional states.
Men and equipment to deal with the mines and Iranian patrol boats considered the most serious threat by on-scene commanders are being delivered to the Gulf by the transport ship Raleigh. The ship left Charleston Tuesday for the nearly month-long trip to the Gulf. The Raleigh is carrying a number of small high-speed patrol boats like those used on river patrols in Vietnam. They will be used to deal with a suicide boat threat, as will several Army helicopters designed to track and sink suicide boats. Also included in this beef-up is a number of the Navy's elite special warfare contingent known as SEALs. Former head of counterterrorism for the Pentagon explained what kind of role the SEALs could play.
If this thing gets sticky, as it threatens to do, we would have the option over there to be as disagreeable in that arena as the Iranians threaten to be.
There are reports that Kuwait and Iran have been holding talks that would end the American reflagging of tankers in return for an end to Iranian attacks on Kuwaiti shipping. But officials in Washington could not confirm that.
As far as our reflagging operation is concerned, it proceeds according to our schedule as we have set it out. There hasn't been any particular delay in it.
Three more Kuwaiti tankers are awaiting reflagging in the Gulf of Oman. Coast Guard of Washington says some paperwork still must be completed before the final okay is given. Escorting of the tankers is not expected to take place for several days. By then, the U.S. will have minesweeping helicopters in the Gulf. Secretary of State Schultz expressed optimism that some U.S. friends or allies would help pick up some of the burden.
There have been proposals from various European countries that there be some joint action organized in some way to deal with the mine problem, and certainly we're ready to talk about that.
So far, calls for help have fallen on deaf ears.
I think there's a lot of concern. I think there may be some things happening that we're not privy to, but yeah, I think we're concerned. Most Americans, like to think our allies are there when we need them, but they don't appear to be there, at least on the surface.
Persian Gulf countries are reluctant to grant landing rights to U.S. military aircraft for fear of reprisals from Iran. The tragedy of the USS Start, the mining of the tanker Bridgeton, and the current Iranian war maneuvers have brought home to all involved just how dangerous a place the Persian Gulf can be. That is giving strength to a move on Capitol Hill to authorize hazardous duty pay.
Hostile fire pay, our danger pay, is only $110 a month. It really doesn't even come close to compensating our sailors for the dangers that they face in patrolling the Gulf.
But some members of the administration fear such an authorization would add momentum to congressional efforts to invoke the War Powers Act.
And what is happening in the Persian Gulf clearly mandates that this administration ought to invoke the War Powers Act. Since the administration won't do it, we have little choice but to go to the courts.
More than 100 members of Congress joined in filing a suit that would require the president to comply with the War Powers Act. The suit is just one more step by a Congress that has grown increasingly uneasy about the administration's reflagging operations in the Persian Gulf.
Anti-American sentiment in and around the Persian Gulf has been vocal and vicious, and U.S. officials are openly worried that the words will turn to deadly deeds.
Tensions are high. They're perhaps higher than they have been for the last few years. And one way that Iran could strike out is through international terrorism. It has not hesitated to do so in the past.
The latest intelligence data from the Pentagon has added to the growing sense of unease.
That there is increased risk now in the Persian Gulf area, in Europe, especially including Germany, in the Middle East generally, and in the U.S.
U.S. embassies across Europe and the Middle East have been alerted to the potential for danger. But at home, the Secretary of State exuded confidence.
We're alert to things and in a position to take action if we need to.
But in the past, the administration has been reluctant to strike back at terrorists, and former CIA official Ray Klein believes that hesitation only breeds further attack.
Washington is a natural terrorist target. Someday, I feel confident the Iranians or some other hostile people will manage to pull off an atrocity in this capital.
FBI officials say they have no hard evidence of pending terrorist attacks here at home, but precautionary measures have been stepped up. As one official put it, we don't have anything concrete to go on, but the fear is very real. Experts are divided on whether the Reagan administration's Persian Gulf policy will prompt an Iranian attack. But experts agree, should Iran decide to take on the U.S., it will be on Iran's playing field. And that playing field is the shadowy world of terrorism.